I think the strongest of the three options would be a regional tribal government format.
Chilista Native Corporation considers organizing a new form of government in the YK Delta. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, November 21st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, thousands of bald eagles flock to Haines each fall. Tourists follow.
It's flat where we live. We have no mountains. We have no snow. We don't have no bald eagles. We don't have any of this.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. Alaska Children's Trust, working to prevent child abuse and neglect by encouraging all Alaskans to take small steps that can make a big difference in the lives of Alaska's children. Information at alaskachildrenstrust.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Children's Trust.
A federal agency has approved the export of liquefied natural gas from a proposed mega project in Alaska to free trade nations. The U.S. Department of Energy said today the automatic approval, which was required by law, should not be read to indicate the department's views on a still pending request to export to non-free trade countries like Japan. Pacific Rim nations such as Japan have been eyed as possible markets for the project, which is being pursued by the state, TransCanada Corporation, and the North Slope's three major energy companies. A final decision on whether to build the project has not been made. Federal Pipeline Coordinator Larry Pursley said more significant than today's order was the relatively little opposition the department received related to the project's export license application. Could the YK Delta see a new tribal government system? Delegates from the region will consider steps that could lead to a new regional government, new taxes, and a constitutional convention. That topic will be front and center at a meeting of the regional committee Monday in Anchorage. The group was created by the board of directors of Chilista, the YK Delta's regional native corporation. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
The delegates will look at major changes to how the YK Delta is governed through four main resolutions under discussion. The first option being considered would strengthen the role of the Association of Village Council Presidents. Amendments include changing the name to the Association of Sovereign Upete Villages, also providing for direct election of the president, and modifying the charter to allow the president to take executive action to carry out directives from the board. The next option is to create a new borough government under Alaska state law with the goal of strengthening the region's political voice. The third option is a constitutional convention to establish a regional tribal government with the intention of assessing taxes currently being paid by regional and village corporations to the U.S. and state governments. Willie Casile is chairman of the Chilista Board of Directors, as well as the Regional Committee and Steering Committee.
I think the strongest of the three options would be a regional tribal government format. Because in that concept, we basically created two house systems similar to the Alaska and federal legislative structure. One side of the house would include tribal representation, tribal governments would basically be one house. And the other, we named it as House of Organizations.
A draft 12-page constitution lays out a regional tribal government complete with three branches of government, power for law enforcement, and fish and game management. The resolution looks at capturing income taxes from native corporations and assessing taxes on regional lands and businesses. The regional committee formed this February after the Chilista Board of Directors voted to create the group to study problems with current legislation affecting Alaska Native people, tribal governments, and corporations, as well as come up with a strategic plan. A 16-person steering committee has met several times since the spring. Chilista says more than 50 tribes have registered for the second full meeting in Anchorage. Several regional organizations have passed resolutions opposing the regional committee, including the Bethel Native Corporation and Bethel's tribe ONC, among others. The Association of Village Council Presidents provided a list of 15 groups opposing an earlier AVCP resolution in support of a regional tribal government, or the Chilista Regional Committee process. Myra Nannion is AVCP president.
That has come up before, but it's been rejected by the tribal governments in the villages because they want to ensure that they continue to have their local tribal powers. And you know, this happened back in 1986 as well as 2000. And, you know, we're kind of perplexed by the fact that Calista is trying to move in this direction.
A final option calls for no changes in governance and would terminate the regional committee. The meeting agenda includes a vote on whether to pursue any of the governance options. The regional committee meets at the Egan Center in Anchorage Monday. Calista's board earlier approved $200,000 to run the committee process. Several corporate sponsors made it possible to fly in delegates to Anchorage for this meeting. KYUK requested to broadcast the proceedings for both of this year's full meetings, but Calista declined. When KYUK requested that a reporter attend this meeting, a spokesperson said the meeting was closed to the public and the media. It's open to shareholders and descendants, space permitting. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
Dog mushers in the Matanuska Susitna Borough are now protected under a new borough ordinance. The law licenses kennels and is aimed at protecting mushers against complaints from neighbors as the Matsu population grows. Iditarod musher Sim Smith testified Wednesday at the Matsu Assembly public hearing.
There's a lot of regulations out there. Very few are positively supporting our sport, which is the state sport. It's a major hobby for a lot of people, but it's also a major business in this state for a lot of people. I pay my taxes with money that I make, racing sled dogs, raising sled dogs.
The ordinance sets out terms for a three-year kennel license and a fee of $150. Matsu Assemblyman Vern Halter keeps a kennel, has run his share of Iditarods, and is an attorney. He sponsored the lengthy ordinance that covers everything from a definition of a sled dog to mushing facility standards of care. Halter also points out mushing is the state sport and that Alaska has been officially recognized as a right-to-mush state by the legislature. A number of professional kennel owners spoke up at the meeting in support of the ordinance. Dee Dee Johnro says the ordinance protects the dogs as well. In her 40 years of mushing, Johnro says she's seen positive changes in dog care.
And I believe that this ordinance is really helping to design the framework for the quality facilities that I think we would like to see all sled dogs have available to them.
Other mushers related negative incidents aimed at their sport, blocked trails and signs with derogatory messages. The ordinance spells out the definition of interference with mushing, with possible fines of up to $1,000 and imprisonment of 90 days. One person spoke against the ordinance, saying the borough has not attached a fiscal note to the law and that there is no money in the borough budget to pay for enforcement. The ordinance passed unanimously. Another orphaned Alaska bear cub needs a home. The young black bear found near Eagle is the eighth the state has dealt with this year. The other seven cubs, all but one black, including a trio rescued in Galena in September, have been placed in Lower 48 wildlife care facilities. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the fate of the latest orphan cub is uncertain.
The small black bear is currently being cared for by longtime Eagle area residents Kate Rourke and Andy Basich, who found the cub under a fish rack at their Yukon River homestead.
It's pretty amazing that the cub would find its way to our place, find the fish rack. Our dogs normally alert us to things like that, but the dogs were not aggressive towards the bear at all.
Basich says there has been no sign of the lone cub's mother, and he's keeping the young bear in a puppy pen.
He's in great shape. He's a probably 15 to 20 pound bear. We're feeding him dried salmon, high quality Inukshuk dog food, nuts, and berries. He's not aggressive at all.
Bastet says he's trying to find a wildlife facility to take the cub and is in contact with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Fish and Game spokeswoman Kathy Harms says it's illegal for Bastet to hold the animal, and the agency plans to take possession of the cub.
It's not that Andy isn't a great person or that Andy can't do it. It's that there's a permitting process the state has to go through, and we can't make it legal for Andy to hold that bear.
Harms says Fish and Game will work with Bastet to find a home for the bear, but otherwise it will be put down.
We don't really have another choice but to euthanize it. Bears take space, they take a great deal of care, and they take a licensed, permitted place.
Given that the state has already placed six other black bear cubs at facilities this year, Harms expects finding a home for the eagle cub to be challenging.
Black bears are very difficult to place, and the reason is that they're relatively common. Most other states do have black bears. Number two, they live long in captivity.
Harms says if the bear can't be placed, it could become a research subject at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, after which it would likely be euthanized. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, same-sex couples in Alaska celebrate their new right to get married.
I've been just thrilled at how, you know, excited people have been to say you're getting married.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
I know, it's really bizarre.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Crowley, celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced this week it is designating Ketchumak Bay as its next habitat focus area. That will open up the door to more directed research and conservation efforts and possible federal funding. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
Ocean acidification and climate change have become more prominent topics of conversation over the last few years, especially in areas heavily dependent on the sea, like much of Alaska.
The ocean conditions are changing, and that's something we want to understand as well as we can so that we can be better prepared to address those changes and help our coastal communities be more resilient to those changes.
Julie Spiegel works with the Alaska region of the National Marine Fisheries Service. She says Ketchumak Bay joins seven other habitat focus areas nationwide under NOAA's Habitat Blueprint Initiative, and it was a logical choice.
One of the special things about Ketchumak Bay is we have already gathered quite a bit of data on ocean conditions and habitats there. What we haven't done is put all that data together and see, you know, what comes out of it, what we can learn from it.
The bay is already a state of Alaska critical habitat area and a national estuarine research reserve, so the building blocks are already in place. She says the Blueprint Initiative provides the framework for organizations to efficiently work together in a targeted area.
We basically select habitat focus areas where we can prioritize resources and activities and foster and leverage partnerships to address changes in coastal and ocean habitat.
Spiegel says NOAA already has relationships with outside groups in the Ketchumak Bay area, including tribal governments, regional citizens advisory councils, municipal bodies, and environmental interest groups. But the designation also encourages NOAA to make a concerted effort within the branches of its own organization.
So you've got NOAA's National Ocean Service, National Weather Service, National Marine Fisheries Service, and we'll be working together internally to focus our efforts on Ketchumak Bay.
But what does that mean practically? Spiegel says it provides groups with the incentive to conduct scientific studies and the facilities to streamline data sharing. But it also has the potential to ease the financial burden that's often a barrier to ongoing research programs. She says there is some federal funding that opens up to projects once they're designated within a habitat focus area. The research and information that comes out of these projects will also reach beyond Ketchumak Bay.
So as we go forward, we'll be sort of using Ketchumak Bay as a testing area to improve NOAA mapping and model information. And we have a goal of developing new tools for habitat assessment that can be used not just in the Ketchumak Bay area, but other coastal areas throughout Alaska.
Spiegel says the next step is to evaluate ongoing studies and what's already in place. Overall, she hopes Ketchumak Bay will provide some more insight into changing ocean conditions and the best ways to manage those changes for the future. In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
The state of Alaska has lost another attempt to reinstate a ban on same-sex marriage, and Governor-elect Bill Walker has changed his stance on the issue. The Fairbanks Daily Newsminer reports the Federal Appeals Court for the West rejected the state's request that an 11-judge panel review the district court decision that found the state's ban unconstitutional. The state could appeal again to the federal court or to the U.S. Supreme Court. The state has spent more than $100,000 defending the ban. As a candidate, Walker said he wouldn't pursue costly litigation with little chance of success, even though he personally believes marriage should be between a man and a woman. But now his spokeswoman says Walker wants a proper analysis before making any decision on a lawsuit. Since same-sex marriage became legal in Alaska, around 90 marriage license applications have been issued to same-sex couples. One of those couples is Kelly Birkinshaw and her partner, Megan Allman, from Juneau. They're getting married tomorrow. The two had discussed marriage before, but they didn't get engaged until a federal judge decided October 12th that Alaska's same-sex marriage ban was unconstitutional. It was important that they marry in a state that meant something to both of them. Megan and Kelly had a conversation about their relationship and getting married at KTOO recently. In the StoryCorps tradition, here's an excerpt of their conversation.
What have you enjoyed about our relationship over the past 5 years?
Six, isn't it?
Six years? Uh-oh. Going on six. It's the fifth year.
Okay. There's not much I don't enjoy about it. All the paddling and kayaking, hiking, geocaching.
I love adventuring with you, and you're just easy to hang with, too. And it's nice to just be able to hang out at home and watch a movie or go on adventures to Point Adolphus and paddle through some crazy waves.
I just really like getting out and having a good time, but I also just really appreciate all our friends.
Yeah, Juneau's a special place that way, and it's really great to be here. Just have good friends around us that support us and accept us for who we are. And
I know I've been just thrilled at how, you know, excited people have been when we say you're getting married.
It's yeah. Like, it's bizarre.
I know. It's really bizarre.
People are excited.
You get married and they start crying in the supermarket. And everybody's crying in the supermarket.
You know, the day after the ruling happened, it was a Sunday night and went into work the next day. And through conversation, it came out that we were engaged. And it sounds funny to say that I'm engaged. And got around the office and everybody was very happy. And it was really cool. And it was just weird to have people be excited for us to be engaged.
Yeah, and the vital statistics went down to apply, and, you know, they changed the marriage application in a really quick amount of time. That was kind of impressive. Party A and Party B. And then they called us back the next day, and they said they were going to change it once again and add the choice to choose bride, groom, or spouse, and wanted to know how we wanted to refer to each other. And so we
quickly agreed on spouse.
Spouse. I never really imagined myself getting married. So it is kind of weird thinking about getting married. No white dress. No
what
veil.
Color are your Carhartt's going to be?
Mine are going to be brown.
When I was, you know, little, before I knew that I was gay, I grew up in a Catholic family. And so, you know, looking at my parents' wedding pictures with, you know, white wedding dresses and 8 bridesmaids and, you know, big wedding parties and then going to family weddings that looked very similar. You know, I'm a woman and so I'm going to grow up and I'll do that too. So, you know, until I realized that I was gay, that's what I envisioned. And then after coming out, it's like, I don't have to worry about that. But things are changing. And now we get to celebrate.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment. On the web at arcticwirerope.com. BP Alaska, committed to the state of Alaska through investment, production, and jobs for future generations of Alaskans. More at alaska.bp.com. And by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Ann Bryce. This week on AK, eagles up close. Each fall, thousands of bald eagles flock to a stretch of the Chilkat River, about 20 miles north of Haines. The birds fly there for a late chum salmon run, and it's one of the largest gathering of eagles in the world. Dozens of people travel to witness the raptors each year, filling up almost every hotel room in Haines. From member station KHNS, Emily Files has the story.
Well, they have a fish, and two more kind of flew in eyeing it, but so far the first guy still has it.
Laura Ferraro is standing on the edge of the Chilkat River watching bald eagles fish for salmon. Ferraro describes herself as a serious hobby photographer. She has a camera on a tripod in front of her with a huge lens.
Yeah, it's probably close to 2 feet long, so it's pretty heavy, probably 8.5 pounds just for the lens.
Ferraro is from Orange County, California. She's visited here once before to photograph the eagles.
They're a beautiful bird. They symbolize freedom, and it's really fun getting the interactions with them here when they try and steal the fish from each other.
Ferraro is not alone on this bank of the Chilkat River. Half a dozen photographers are clicking away. They're here during the Bald Eagle Festival. It's a week-long event Haines holds each November to capitalize on the influx of visitors. Like Richard Barrett, who has traveled even farther than Ferraro. Barrett is an amateur photographer from the UK.
Quite a difficult place to get to is Haines, and I've come a very long way to get here.
You think it'll be worth it?
Yeah, no doubt. And all the raptors are great birds to photograph. And then here we've got the fantastic mountain backdrop as well. So you've got a lot of ingredients to make a really nice photograph.
He's planning to use some of the pictures he takes here in a wildlife calendar. Other people have less official plans for their eagle photos.
Making everyone else envious, they haven't been here.
Chris Clor traveled from Dallas with her twin sister, Michaela Davis, and their husbands, Duncan and Jack. They've been planning this trip for 3 years.
It sort of makes my heart beat fast. It's so pretty.
It's something that you don't see in the lower 48. You don't see all this beauty. So it's really nice. It's something different for us to see.
It's flat where we live. We have no mountains. We have no snow. We don't have no bald eagles. We don't have any of this.
This year, there seem to be fewer bald eagles because the weather has been clear and sunny and the rest of the Chilkat River isn't frozen over. But American Bald Eagle Foundation Executive Director Cheryl McRoberts says they've still counted more than 2,000 eagles along the river. This is the 20th year the foundation has held the Bald Eagle Festival.
We have people here this year from New Zealand, Africa, England.
McRoberts says 184 people registered for the festival. Throughout the week, the foundation holds eagle feedings, raptor presentations, lectures, and more. Dave Olrud is the founder of the Bald Eagle Foundation. He helped advocate for the 48,000-acre Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve that was established by the state in 1982.
Well, every creature out there has a beautiful story to tell, and the bald eagle is a classic.
Olrud says one reason people are interested in eagles is their power.
Ancient civilizations or old civilizations, what did they use to tell the story of their dominance or the power of their society? They used the eagle.
Back along the river, Dave Thiessen from Whitehorse points out a group of about 100 eagles near the water.
I think it's rare for wildlife not to be scared of us, you know? Like most animals just avoid us so much that you just catch a short glimpse, but with the eagles, you can watch them for, you know, close up for a long time. They don't care.
What many of the photographers here hope for is that perfect picture.
I got a shot yesterday that I'm just thrilled to death with. It makes the entire trip worthwhile.
James Norman is an amateur photographer and retired lawyer from Virginia. He describes the picture.
Two eagles interacting, both in the air, claws extended, separated by an inch perhaps. Nice spray of backlit water behind them. I'm thrilled to death.
Norman plans to enter the shot in photography contests. The migration of eagles and photographers to the Chilkat River will continue until the end of the salmon run, around late December. For AK, I'm Emily Files.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to the community of South Naknek on Bristol Bay.
My name is Lori Ann Rawson. I am the tribal administrator, and I'm with the Native Village of South Naknek.
were secluded. The only way to get there is by airplane. Naknek is separated by the Naknek River, and it's about a mile wide. Originally, it was the original Naknek, and somehow Naknek across the river started using Naknek, so we became South Naknek. And the original name for the village is Kanuyang. We have a lot of people that come in seasonally, and we used to have 4 fish processing canneries for work. It's mostly most of the employees are employed by the tribe, and the second most employed are by the Bristol Bay Borough and then the South Naknek Post Office. We don't have a store. We don't have a gas station. The only thing we do have is post office. So everyone has to be self-sufficient. Generally, if anyone is in need, for instance, if they get stranded or stuck or anything like that, people are very willing to help. It's both traditional and modern. Fishing, hunting, caribou, bears, rabbits. We're a traditional Russian Orthodoxy village. We follow the old Julian calendar, so we do have community activities. The 2 big ones are Christmas and Easter and Russian Christmas. Christmas and Easter, it's centrally located. The Russian Christmas, it's to each person's home.
Lorianne Rawson is the tribal administrator with the native village of South Naknek. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK This Week. We had help from Emily Files, Ashley Snyder, Annie Fite, and David Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Ann Bryce.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ben Matheson in Bethel, Ellen Lockyer in the Mat-Su Valley, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Shady Grove Oliver in Homer, and Lisa Fu in Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal Housing Lender, Member FDIC. Alaska Native elders are 5 times more likely to be injured in a fall, but there are simple ways for elders to reduce fall-related injuries. Get an eye exam every year. Stay informed about medications that can cause dizziness. Exercise regularly to increase strength and balance, and keep your home clutter-free. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.